Hello there, and welcome to KDL's Stump the Librarian podcast, where your friendly neighborhood librarians put their research skills to the test to answer questions from you, the listener, or a pirate sailing the high seas, or a friendly ghost. I'm Jill, and I'm here with Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Jill.
We love answering your questions, so please send them to us at kdl.org/stump or email us at stumpthelibrarian@kdl.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love it if you followed the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. When you follow and like our podcast, more people can find us. All right, here's our top of the pod question, Liz.
All right.
If you could shrink down to the size of a toy, what toy would you want to hang out with?
What toy would I want to hang out with? Okay, this is what I'm picturing in my head. Do you go to Costco? You do go to Costco.
Of course.
You know, yeah. Every once in a while, they have that gigantic bin of Squishmallows, like yes. Those big ones. I think I would like to hang out. I'd be small, but hang out with those giant Squishmallows. It would be like a big pillow party, you know, like
yeah.
You could be, I don't know, they're all really cute and they all have different little personalities. I think I would hang out with Squishmallows.
That sounds fun. I wonder how they move.
They just sit.
They kind of rock back and forth,
right?
A little, maybe.
Oh, they're so squishy and cute.
That's great. Well, I would shrink down really, really, really tiny and hang out in my Legos.
Oh, okay.
And then I would just like run around the Lego castle.
What castle is it?
It's a Hogwarts castle. Oh, you know, I have a lot of Hogwarts castles at my house. So I would just run around and hang out with Harry Potter's plural. There's several of them in the sets. And
right. You could just blend in.
Yeah, I'd be one of the students. Be like, I'm going to go do some Quidditch.
That would be fun.
But I would try to avoid the basilisk. I have the Lego basilisk.
Ooh.
I would avoid him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think he's missing a fang from my cat. But...
That's unfortunate.
Still seems deadly.
Awesome. That would be fun.
It sounds fun. I think it would be very exciting.
Awesome.
But we have a question from a listener today, too.
Enough about that. I have a question. Yeah. It is from Natalie, age 10, from Alto. And Natalie wonders, where do bruises come from and where do they go?
Ooh, good question.
It's a great question. Jill, question for you. Have you ever found a bruise maybe on your arm or your leg and you couldn't remember where it came from?
That happens to me all the time.
Does it?
Yes.
Okay. I find them like on my shins on my knees. And I think, well, it must have hurt when whatever I did, but I don't remember. Oh, and before we get into this, I'd like to let it be known that I am a librarian, not a doctor. So
that's good. That's important.
But I'm a mom and I have seen many bruises in my day. One of my kids once got hit in the arm with a baseball. And he was fine, but
that's a big bruise.
It left the imprint of the ball his skin, like the little stitches on a baseball. Fascinating,
yeah.
That it left that mark on him.
It's a pretty epic bruise.
It really was. I like to start my searches for medical information from sites like the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic, because they're great at describing medical information in a way that's easy to understand. And you know that it came from a medical professional.
Right.
Bruises are also called contusions. Isn't that a fun word?
That's a great word. I didn't know that was a bruise. I thought it was a cut.
No. And they can happen whenever there's trauma to the skin. Before we get to the bumps and the bruises, though, let's talk about blood.
Oh, blood. Okay.
Here's a blood fun fact for you. Did you know that blood flows through your body at a speed of 3 to 4 miles per hour?
No, I didn't.
So when you think of 3 to 4 miles per hour, it sounds kind of slow. Like if you think of like compared to a car driving down the road.
Right.
But... At that speed, the 3 to 4 miles per hour, it takes under a minute for blood to make it all the way around your body.
Wow.
I know. A minute.
Yeah.
At 3 to 4 miles an hour. So there are three different types of blood vessels, which form a loop in your body that begins and ends at your heart. There are arteries, which are big and strong, pumping blood away from your heart. Veins are next, and they carry blood back towards your heart. And then there are capillaries, which connect arteries and veins. They are teeny tiny blood vessels. They're even smaller than veins, like the width of a hair on your head. Mm-hmm. Capillaries have walls that are so thin that oxygen and nutrients can pass through them to deliver those important things to your bloodstream. They connect veins and arteries to your body's tissues. They're like the surface streets of your body, where arteries and veins are the main highway. Also, another fun fact, if you laid out all of your blood vessels, so your arteries, your veins, your capillaries, in a line, your blood vessel network could circle the globe.
Whoa.
For one person. It's over 60,000 miles in length.
Wow.
Inside your body. Isn't that fascinating?
That is
fascinating. It's kind of gross, but it's kind of fascinating. Okay, yeah. So we learned how blood moves through your body. A bruise happens when you bump your skin and one of those capillaries, those teeny tiny blood vessels, breaks. They're super thin, so whatever was inside that capillary has nowhere to go. So it just pools under the surface of your skin. Bruises can be dark in color when they first appear, but usually fade and sometimes turn a rainbow of colors as the little pool of blood and cells is reabsorbed into your body. If you notice a bruise that starts out red, what you're seeing is hemoglobin, a protein in your red blood cells. Mm. So you see that first. In a couple of days, bruises typically turn black or sometimes a purpley-blue color. Mm-hmm. The next color is greenish yellow, and that's after 5 to 10 days. And the last color of your bruise rainbow is brownish yellow. At that point, it should fade away, and you can bid your bruise goodbye. Mm-hmm. Bruises are typically flat, but if it feels bumpy, it's called a hematoma.
Oh,
that's a fun word, too.
Yeah, it is.
That's usually a big bruise, and blood starts to form little clots under your skin, which makes it feel lumpy. Have you ever bumped your head and felt what's called a goose egg, a bump
yes,
on your head?
I have.
That's a hematoma.
Okay.
Interesting. So why do some people bruise like a peach and some people do not? Side note, that idiom comes from how fragile ripe peaches can be. Mm-hmm. I was trying to find some more information, and I saw some people say bruise like a banana, which doesn't have the same ring to it as bruise like a peach. So we're going to stick with that one. But
I don't think of them as being as delicate as peaches either.
No, but they do bruise.
They do.
But
yeah.
Anyway, okay. When people get older, the skin is thinner, so there's less protection for those capillaries under the skin. Mm-hmm. So older people tend to bruise more easily. Some medications or supplements can cause people to bruise more easily, too. People with fair skin or skin that's a light color may bruise more vibrantly as it's easier to see the little pool of blood under the skin. Mm. It could also be hereditary. So maybe you get bruises easily because one of your parents does, too.
That makes sense.
So how can you prevent bruises? It's important to wear safety equipment when you're doing something that is potentially dangerous. So when you're biking or skateboarding or playing sports, always wear a helmet and protective gear. It's also important to wear sunscreen to protect your skin because sun damage also plays a role in how easily your skin bruises.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There you go. I hope that answers your question, Allie. Protect yourself when you can, but bruises happen to everyone. Your body will take care of itself. The end.
That's a good answer.
Well, thanks.
That was very interesting.
A lot of blood information.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I have a fact of the day for us today.
You do?
I do.
Tell me more.
It is from a book called 100 Things to Know About the Unknown.
It's from. But if you know about it, is it still unknown?
Not anymore. Once you read this book, it won't be. And it is from the Curious section of our library, which
I
is a fun
love
place.
The Curious. collection.
Super fun place. And there are 100 facts in here, and they're numbered. So I'm going to be reading you fact number 17.
Okay.
Crocodiles cry, but no one knows why.
What?
People often refer to crocodile tears as a way of describing false sadness or fake tears, but it's not just an idiom. Crocodiles do shed real tears when they eat, and scientists aren't sure why. Just crying while he eats.
Aw.
Poor guy.
Interesting.
Don't try to make him feel better, though, because then he'll eat you.
We don't want that.
No. Stay away from crocodiles.
Well, it was a fascinating fact.
This book is just full. Each page is a page of interesting information. So if you want to know things that are unknown,
yeah,
check it out.
I want to know. I want to know.
You want to know what you don't know?
I think I do.
Well, I also have a question from a listener today.
Super.
It's from Kara from our Gaines branch. And Kara asks, what causes the northern lights?
Oh.
So the first time I think that I heard of the Northern Lights was in the 1995 movie Balto. Have you seen that, Liz?
I have seen Balto.
Oh, yeah. It appears that you can stream this on Amazon Prime, or you can check it out from the library. I looked. We have two copies, but there are holds on them. So put yourself on the hold list there.
Hot item.
Yeah. Disney does have a more accurate movie now that represents this historical event that the movie is portraying. It's called Togo, but Baldo will always have a special place in my heart. My classic. Sister and I quote it often. And in this movie, Balto, a dog, pushes some broken bottles together, shines a light on it, and says, Northern Lights. Did I mention that this is an animated movie?
Does he have like a flashlight or something?
I can't remember how the light happens. I just remember that. Okay, Carrie, I promise not to spend the rest of this answer talking about the animated movie Balto, but I just feel like everybody should see it.
I digress.
And then, yeah, it's really important, Balto. But the Northern Lights.
Sure.
They're a common name for Aurora Borealis. In Aurora is a beautiful light show. The light can be in arcs or rays in colors green, blue, yellow, red, or orange. The light seems to shimmer and dance in the sky. These light shows happen near the poles. So although we're talking about the northern lights, that's the Borealis part, we also could be talking about the southern lights. People generally don't see the southern lights because the land where you can see the lights from, that's not a place where people live in the south.
Oh.
So that's why.
Okay.
But in the north, people do see the northern lights. The lights only appear in the evening, and you have to be pretty far north to see them. You can see them the best from Canada or Alaska, but you can see them even here in Michigan. You could see them best in the Upper Peninsula or in the upper parts of Michigan because it's further north and because there's less light pollution.
Yeah, it's darker. It's darker. At night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. Yep. If you're by a city and there's a lot of light pollution, you can't see them. I was trying to find out where is the potential the furthest south you could see them. And one source said that you could see them as far south, even as Mexico. But I think that's very rare to see them that far south. They're really most prevalent the further north you go.
Sure.
Have you ever seen the Northern Lights, Liz?
I have been to the state of Alaska, but I was there at the time where they were having all of their daylight, you know, where it's light, really late at night. So no, I did not see them, but I saw lots of pictures of them all over the place where we were in Fairbanks.
There were
lots of beautiful photographs of them at different times of the year than when we were there. So no, I haven't.
Right. I'm glad you brought up pictures because that was the next thing that I was going to say is that you have to go look at pictures of the Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about them and right now and like why they exist, but you have to see them if you've never, and I've never seen them in person either. It's definitely on a list of things I'd like to do, but pictures of them are beautiful.
So beautiful.
And sometimes people have a video of them because they really do dance in the sky. Mm-hmm. And the place I started this time was, my research was the Britannica on our database, and there were several videos of them linked in the website there. So you can go see them there, or you can just go online and look at pictures of the Northern Lights. Dream about them first, and then someday you will drive up to a tiny Canadian city and see them in person.
That would be amazing.
I know. So here's how they happen. Here's how the auroras happen. The sun sends things towards the earth. Here's the things it sends. It sends multiple things. Yeah, you chose the word things. It sends heat. It sends light. It sends energy. And it says small particles. It does not send the same amount of energy. All those things are really energy all of the time. Mm-hmm. It varies. There is a constant solar wind that comes from the sun, but there are also times when there is more wind or solar storms, and that comes at higher speeds. Our Earth is protected from these particles, all this energy that's coming from the sun, by Earth's magnetic field. Earth's magnetic field forces the particles that come from the sun to move away from the Earth. And when they do that, they end up entering the Earth's atmosphere at the poles. So as the particles enter the Earth's atmosphere, they collide with gases and other particles in our atmosphere. And we talked about this when we talked about sunsets. We talked about this very same phenomenon. So the same thing is happening. When these energy from the sun hits gases from the Earth, then the result is the beautiful colors that we see dancing through the sky. And we see it at the poles because that is where the energy is coming in because of Earth's magnetic force. Different gases in the Earth react with the sun's energy to make different colors. I thought this was so interesting. Oxygen gives off green and red light. Most of the pictures that I've seen of the Northern Lights, it's a lot of green, and there's a lot of oxygen in the air. And I think probably what I've seen second most is kind of like that blue and purpley color, and that is when the sun's energy is reacting with nitrogen. So I think sometimes we don't see that as much because of what we talked about in the sunset episode is that our human eyes don't see those colors as well. So sometimes we can see them depending on how vibrant they are, but sometimes we just don't see them as well. Auroras happen most frequently when the solar wind is moving fast. NASA had a special satellite called IMAGE. It launched in the year 2000, so a long time ago, and it was lost in the year 2005. That's when it went offline. But for those 5 years, it was specifically researching ultraviolet light and the formation of auroras. So that's how we know a lot about it, is from that particular satellite, which I think is really interesting that NASA's like, we want to know about this.
Specifically.
Exactly. I thought this was so interesting. I found most of this information right off of NASA's website. NASA has a really wonderful website that is friendly for students. It has videos, it has pictures, it has really great information. But they have discovered, NASA's discovered, that the sun goes through an 11-year cycle of sending energy and the amount of solar winds. So it's a cycle of lower winds to higher winds.
It's kind of a weird number for a cycle, 11?
It is strange. I think it's probably the fact that it's that short means that we have seen it enough times to say, okay, this is fairly consistent. Because, you know, we did this study in the year 2000. That's been two cycles.
Right.
So that's helpful that we can see it. We can observe it. At the end of the 11-year cycle, there's the solar maximum. That's what they call it, the solar maximum, which means the sun is sending the most energy and there's the most amount of solar storms and therefore the most and the brightest auroras. Scientists can't yet, I'm sure that they'll get there because they're really smart and they're doing lots of research, but they can't yet predict the exact times of the solar maximums, but they do believe that the next solar maximum or that end of that solar cycle is coming up in 2024-2025.
Oh, so this would, Jill, this would be your time.
Right now, I need to go do it.
Go.
Yeah. So this is it, the best time to go see it. I know I mentioned Alaska and Canada already, but there's some other places that I want to mention that are really good places for, and they even have what's called Aurora Borealis tourism.
So
you can go and have like a guided tour and go to the best places to take photos and those kind of things. So Sweden, Iceland, Finland, Norway, those are all amazing places to view this beautiful phenomenon because those countries are all very far north, and that's where you can see those places. So come into the library and we're going to load you up with books about all these cold places and you can start planning your trip. Liz, I heard this story. I was at a conference and last week I heard a story about a young person who learned about the country of China from his librarian, and then he just kept researching, and then he took a trip there.
Like as a kid?
Yes.
No.
With his parents, but yes, okay. As a kid.
Wow.
It was just so exciting to me to hear that story, and it just made me think the things you can learn in a library when you set your mind to something. So even if you never make it to Finland, you can still learn about it in the library and you can see pictures here and we can help you find really good resources. So come learn about these cool, cold places. So this is not an answer to Kara's question. I already answered her question. Okay. This is how they went, but this is a myth.
Oh, okay.
I love a good myth about science. Mm-hmm, this is a myth that early people had about Aurora Borealis. I linked this article in here because there are myths from all of these countries about why are there lights in the sky. And they're similar, but there's some different ones. But I want to share the one from Finland because I think it's fun. The word in Finnish for northern lights translate into English as firefox. That's what they call it.
Firefox.
Yeah. This is the story that they told in Finland about what are those lights in the sky. There were Arctic foxes, and they would run so fast in the sky, this is a legend, remember, that when their bushy tails rubbed against the trees in the mountains, it would spark and send fire into the sky. And that fire was the Northern Lights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good story.
I know. I think that myths about real things in nature that we can learn about are so exciting.
Yeah.
To see what were the myths that people thought before we had...
Folklore.
Yeah, before we had scientific exploration.
Right. There had to be a way to explain it. Interesting.
And now we have satellites like Image that can go in the sky and study it.
Yeah. Right.
But I like Firefox.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you make it there, Jill.
I mean, I will see them in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that.
Sure. Alaska would be cool too.
Alaska would be so cool. Yep.
Cool. Now I want to go look at pictures.
Yeah.
Northern Lights.
So what are you reading right now, Liz?
Oh, I just read this great book called Mexikid. It's a graphic memoir by Pedro Martin. And I'm not really much of a nonfiction reader, but this is a graphic novel memoir, so I'll read a graphic novel. I love graphic novels, Jill.
Me too. I love them
because it's so satisfying to just sit down and read a whole book.
That's a thick book you have there, Liz.
It was like 2 hours that I sat and read this book because I couldn't put it down, of course. Yep. But it was so engaging, and the illustrations are amazing. So I laughed out loud, and you know, sometimes you're reading a book and you think to yourself, oh, that's funny. But like, I was laughing out loud because it was that funny.
That's good.
So this is the story of Pedro, one of 8 siblings.
Oh, boy.
So lots of people. When he was living in California and took a road trip to Mexico, his 8 brothers and sisters are divided. So there's older kids and younger kids. And the older kids are called barn kids because they were born in a barn, literally. And then the younger kids are hospital kids because they were in California at the time and born in a hospital. So it takes place in 1977. So it feels, the colors and the illustrations, it feels kind of retro, if you know what that is. Like lots of gold and yellow and 70s. But really the things that happened to him could happen to any kid in a big family. I mean, I have 3 brothers, so we were moderately, but I mean, 8 brothers and sisters.
That's a lot, yeah.
So this whole group is heading to Mexico to bring back their grandfather, their abuelito, to live with them in California. So there's going to be another person living in this house with them. They have to go get him, though. But before they go, there's a lot of stories about what it's like living in a house with that many people. Like, they can't all eat dinner together. There's just not room for them. So they kind of eat in shifts. Mm-hmm. And then somebody's always by the door because they have lots of family and friends that just pop by. So he talks about, like, having to sit at the door spot and, like, talk to people as they come in and out of his house and never being able to finish their meal. But so, okay. So they load up, and the older kids are going to drive in a pickup truck. And the younger kids and the parents are going to drive in this RV. And they have to communicate with each other through CB radio because this was before phones.
Right. No phones.
So there's lots of funny things like what they're saying to each other back and forth on the CB. There are stops along the way where they meet extended family and friends. And then they have to cross the border into Mexico, which is actually kind of a scary moment in the book.
Yeah.
Because Pedro's pretty young and he is not fluent in Spanish. His parents speak Spanish, but he grew up in California. So he doesn't always understand what is happening. Mm-hmm. His father ends up having to bribe the border guards to get them into Mexico. Mm-hmm. So finally they get there and they get to their abuelitos. But some of the things that happen in Mexico, I was just cracking up because Pedro is not super fluent in Spanish, so he also doesn't really understand how their money works because it's different.
Right.
And I guess nobody told him, so he's like not always understanding how much he's paying for things. Like he pays these kids on the street for fireworks that he's not exactly he spends a lot of money on them, and they totally don't work because these kids took him for a ride because they could tell that he was not from there.
Right.
He goes to get a haircut, and the barber tells him he's going to look like the Fonz, which is a character from the TV show Happy Days. And he's very cool, and he ends up like shaving part of his head, and his siblings are all making fun of him. Like, he looks ridiculous, but it was funny. And then they go to this market where they're, you know, sampling food, and they're in Mexico, and they're not used to some of the things that they eat and drink there, and so they have some digestive issues. It's a little gross at times, but it was hilarious. So Pedro's parents grew up in Mexico, so his abuelito is there, and then he's only heard stories about him, so he is kind of meeting him for the first time and learning what an awesome person he is, and they communicate with each other through drawings because his abuelito draws as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So they tell each other stories. It was fantastic. Usually I am an audiobook listener, but a graphic novel, I think you have to see this.
You have to see the
pictures. Mm-hmm. I do not speak Spanish, but there are translations in some of the parts of the book, but not everything. So you kind of have to do a little bit of reading into the pictures to see exactly what's happening. But it's available in print and audio and ebook and in Spanish language. If you are a Spanish language speaker, it's available in Spanish as well. So highly recommend it. Delightful, heartwarming, great story. Mexikid. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it.
It's a great one.
I want to read it again. It was cracking me up.
Oh, that's high praise. Want to read it again.
I do. I would read it again. Mm-hmm. All right. That's it.
What did we learn today?
Oh, gosh. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the Aurora Borealis. However, I think the crocodile tears fact of the day was the most interesting because it's unknown.
Right.
Unknown.
Why do they cry?
Why they're crying.
Maybe we should dig into that for the future.
But if it's is it really unknown, or is that just the book?
Maybe there's just like theories.
I want to know more.
Yeah.
That was a great fact of the day. Mm-hmm. How about you? What did you learn?
Okay, well, first of all, I love the word hematoma.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's great. I feel like I've heard that word before, and I also didn't know what it meant, so sure. I like that.
Yep. Yep.
I thought that was interesting that's what a goose egg is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that there's just
there's so many blood vessels in your head that it instantly...
Yeah, that makes sense, because if you crack that thing open, it's a lot of blood.
Right, like head, if you cut yourself, like it just bleeds.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Interesting. Hematoma. It's a great word.
Try to use it in a sentence today.
I probably won't, but thank you for that vocabulary term.
Oh, my pleasure. All right. Well, that's it for us today. Thanks for all of your amazing questions and helping us learn more about our world, too. For more information or to send us your own questions, head to kdl.org/stump. Tune into the next episode where we answer more of your questions. Huge and special thanks to the KDL Programming Department, the KDL Marketing Department, and JD Dolinsky for our intro and outro music. Thank you!